Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who have tuned into the show the last week or two know that I just released a new book, and it ties in with my EWTN television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. The name of the book is the same as the show. It's called They Might Be Saints on the Path to Sainthood in America. And in that book, I feature 24 venerables and blesseds. And these are people who were either born in the United States or spent the majority of their lives in the United States. And being a Chicagoan myself, I'm very proud that we have three venerables, Father Augustus Tolton, Mother Maria Kalpas, and also Mary Teresa Dujic. And we're so excited today to talk with the vice postulator of that canonization cause, and that is Sister Jean Marie Chirisky. Welcome to the program today.
Thank you.
Well, so excited to chat with you about somebody, a saint, a future saint that many people, even in the Chicago area, might not be familiar with. So it'll be great to shed some light on this future saint from Chicago. And so I think one of the interesting things when I did some research on her life, I saw that even in her childhood, she showed a care and preference and interest in caring for the poor, even at an early age. Talk about Mary Teresa's interest in tending to the poor.
As a little girl, she lived in her poor village of Płaszcz, Poland. Times were really tight there. The village is so small, it actually doesn't even have a Catholic church, which you can imagine is very unusual for Poland. And she saw beggars there, and her family had said to her, you know, we got to be careful. You know, you got brothers and a brother and some sisters. We need to really keep our wealth to ourselves here just to make it through. But not her. She would see the poor and encounter a couple of beggars. And as much as she has promised her mom and dad, her blue eyes would go soft with compassion, and she would again share her coins with the poor, or supper with a poor girl, or take some food that she put aside over to a sick neighbor. That was how she was, and her family regaled that story to us, so that's how we know it.
Amazing. And I know of her, and some Americans know of her, because she eventually immigrated to the United States and spent time in Chicago. Talk about that aspect of her life where she came to the United States.
Yes. So her family came over in 1881, which would be about 10 years after the Great Fire. And that Great Fire really had an influence on her life here in the United States. She came over already trained as a seamstress and was able to do fine needlework and things like that. So she had a nice, comfortable life with her family. She was taking care of her elderly father and mother. Her other siblings had gone off and married, etc., or joined a convent, but she stayed back and took care of them. But as she did the work, she would walk out on the streets, you know, to deliver her goods, and she would see the poor and the homeless. And the situation was dire because restrictions after the Great Fire said that everyone must rebuild in brick to avoid another Great Fire, and people couldn't afford brick. You being from Chicago know how expensive brick is, and houses to this day have face brick, and the rest is that kind of junky looking stuff, you know. So people couldn't. So they crowded together in rental houses, especially on the north, south, and west where the fire hadn't struck. The population was booming like crazy because of the situation in Europe. People were immigrating over here. And as she saw all these homeless people and all those epidemics hit the city with diphtheria and typhoid, especially because of the crowded conditions, everybody breathing on each other, and we being in a pandemic know what that can be like. Right. She said, I've got to do something about it. So when her father passed away, she was just with her mom, and she said, you know, we've got room in the house. I want to take some people in and start to care for them. And so she started to do that. And then being a member of the Third Order of St. Francis, the secular division, she turned to some of her friends that were also in the Third Order and said to them, do you want to help me? And that's how the idea of a congregation grew.
Amazing. We're talking today with Sister Jean Marie Chirisky, the Vice Postulator for Venerable Mary Teresa Dudzik. And this is, of course, very near and dear to your heart because you are a member of the Franciscan Sisters of Chicago yourself. How did it come to be that she ended up founding this order?
She ended up founding the order not because she really wanted to found a religious order, but Father Barshinsky, who was the pastor at St. Stanislaus Kostka up on the northwest side, said to her, you know, if you're going to make this into something stable, I mean, what happens if you end up dying from one of these, you know, diphtheria, typhoid, or whatever? What if the other women lose heart? Are you going to turn those people out and send them back on the street? If you ladies all decided that you would become religious and founded a religious order, there would be stability. There would be some way that these people could be cared for in perpetuity. Also, the fact that you, as an unmarried woman, are taking men and women into your house, that starts to look a little shady and rumors could start. So the best protection would be for you to become religious. Well, she thought about it and talked to her, you know, confers in the order, third order with her, and they decided yes. And so on December 8th, 1894, the Franciscan Sisters of Chicago were born.
Wonderful. Well, what a fascinating beginning to this order. And we're talking today with Sister Jean Marie Chirisky, the Vice Postulator of the Canonization Cause for Venerable Mary Teresa Dudzik. And when someone is proposed as a saint, it's a long process. And then when they're declared venerable, their life of heroic virtue has been thoroughly investigated and established. Talk a little bit about that process of how she ended up being declared venerable.
Well, it was a long process. We actually first started it in 1960, so it was like 100 years after her birth, you know. And we had a retreat master came in who actually had been in the death camps in Poland and survived that entire thing. And he came here to the United States, and they invited him to do retreats because we still at that time had a lot of Polish immigrant sisters. And when he heard about our founders and looked into it, he said, oh, my goodness, do you realize you've got a saint here? And so the cause was born. And the Vatican, of course, looks at what are the key virtues. And chief of these is charity. As we know, that's the queen of all the virtues, of the theological virtues. And, you know, as we look even at the writings of Paul, he talks about love or charity being supreme. And so I'd like to share with you a story of her heroic charity,
yes,
which
please.
Is part of what sparked that. When you're looking at all those early sisters, they're working in the cramped space of an apartment where everyone was forever at everyone else's elbow. They tried to keep up a positive spirit, but they were already older single women joining an order. They were used to making their own schedules, their own decisions and plans. And so it was tough to go into the whole thing of obedience and poverty. You know, chastity was not an issue with them, but the other two, oh my, characters conflicted with each other. And because the work they were doing to gain money was either sewing or taking in the laundry from the rectory. Now, let me tell you, that rectory had, guess what, 30 priests.
Oh, my.
That's how big that parish was. So doing the laundry for 30 men, plus the altar cloths and everything, and doing it all by hand, the sisters' work in doing the laundry felt totally overwhelmed. Laundry by hand was removing stains using a scrub board and a bar of soap, lifting up heavy wet loads of sheets and altar linens from tubs of boiling soapy water. You had to wring it out by hand, rinse it in large basins, lift it up and wring it out again, put it into the hot starch, wring it out again, carry it outdoors, put it on the lines to dry, take it down again, sprinkle it, and then iron it damp. Those sisters doing the laundry were convinced they had the hardest job of all.
Wow.
They saw Sister Teresa and the couple other sister seamstresses as having an unfair advantage of light, easy, needle work. Soon there was no peace. Teresa tried to reason with them that they lacked the training for being a seamstress, but that fell on deaf, angry ears. Finally, she agreed to exchange jobs. Within a week, that was disastrous. clients for the tailoring work were appalled at the drop in quality and quickly voiced their displeasure. These new seamstresses moaned that they were unaccustomed to dealing with such fussy people, that sewing was tedious and boring, and that this was no solution to the fact that all the work, regardless of the job, was too hard. Oh, Sister Teresa took a deep breath and remembered her promise to be faithful to the community. The community and the needy required the income from these jobs. There's simply no other paying jobs to be had for women at the time. So she turned to God for prayer, in prayer for patience, help, rearranged the work schedule, took back her tailoring clients, and added to her own full schedule additional hours in the laundry doing the heaviest work herself. Her mother, who lived with her, begged her to remember that she had to guard her health and refrain from overwork. She always was a frail person. She threw that caution to the wind. She was willing to sacrifice her life for the love of Jesus, whom she saw in the faces of the poor and hungry. Years later, in her chronicle, her remembrance book, she wrote, "I would consider it even great happiness to be able to suffer for the greater glory of God and the good of this community."
Wow, an amazing life. We're talking about Venerable Mary Teresa Dudzik with Sister Jean Marie Tyriski, the vice postulator for her canonization cause, and got a little insight into her life and what she went through in the founding and running of that order. Now, when we talk about her canonization cause, we have four steps that we all know about: servant of God, venerable, blessed, and saint. She's currently at station number 2, venerable. Her life of heroic virtue has been established. And so what happens next? What needs to happen in order for her to move to blessed?
Well, the next thing we need is the miracle. And the miracles that people typically look for are healing attributed to the intercession of the saint or to contact with her relics. The first one that we looked at occurred in 1972, right here in Chicago, where we had that Illinois Central train crash. 45 people were killed, 332 were injured, and among the injured was the teenager, Jerry Lisetsky. He went into a coma. The doctors said he'd never recover. He had major injuries all over. But his mom just said, "He's got to come back. I want my son back." So she came to our mother house and went over at the sarcophagus, which is the enclosure around Mother Teresa's coffin that we have in our chapel. And it was right after Christmas, and she took leaves from the poinsettia plants that were up on top of the sarcophagus, took them to the hospital, and placed them on Jerry's five senses, and prayed a 9-day novena to Mother Teresa. On the 9th day, Jerry woke up. Medical records were retrieved, and the doctors testified before an archdiocesan tribunal that it was beyond anything that could have been done, and that even in 2003, when this trial went on, medicine still would not have gotten him back. Hmm. However, it didn't meet the requirements of the Vatican process, and in 2010, the process stagnated.
Hmm.
A second possible miracle occurred in Normal, Illinois, near Peoria, where, you know, John Rushkowski, an 80-some-year-old man, was really worried about his health, and he wanted to stay alive to care for his wife, who was experiencing dementia. He got a picture of Mother Teresa cut out of the Catholic newspaper that featured a little story about that whole train miracle, and he decided he was going to pray to her. He had been diagnosed with end-stage renal disease, and as Dr. Bruja said, he only had 6 months to live. As that diagnosis sank into his mind, he turned even more to Mother Teresa, held the picture to himself, and prayed to her. The doctor later reported, "I can't believe it. He's recovering." And it gave us a letter saying that he considered that this was something from prayer. Dr. Bruja said, "Prayer and grace help in all circumstances. It is never misdiagnosed. It is never a medication error. It is never negligent like medicine can be." So John made the recovery. His wife died March 9th, and On March 26th, he died, and the family believes that Mother Teresa granted his prayer to keep him alive to care for his wife till she passed.
An amazing story of a miracle, favor, or grace through the intercession of Venerable Mary Teresa Dujic. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Jean Marie Turiski, for talking to us about this up-and-coming future saint. And if people want to find out more about her life and perhaps find a prayer or to seek her intercession, what's the best website or perhaps book that people can find out more information?
Okay, we have a website, MotherTeresaDujic.com. And Teresa's with an H in it, and Dujic is D-U-D-Z-I-K, so MotherTeresaDujic.com. That is her beatification site, and you'll find all kinds of stories there, more detail about these, miracle or miraculous things. We can't really officially call them a miracle. You can also find it at Chicago Franciscans. With an S.com, which is the website of our order. Additionally, we have been able to put into print Mother Teresa's chronicle, her own personal memories of the founding of the order and what it was all like. It comes in a color edition, a black and white edition, and also an ebook, and is available through Amazon Book. Again, the chronicle by Venerable Mother Mary Teresa. Also, Michael,
wonderful.
You have a book.
Yes, I do. Yeah, the new book is called They Might Be Saints. It was just come out a week or so ago, and one of the 24 chapters on Venerables and Blesseds in America is on Venerable Mary Teresa. So people can find out more about her life and that book as well. So thank you for that, and thank you for the great interview, Sister Jean Marie Teresky, for joining us on today's program and shedding some light on the future saint, Venerable Mary Teresa Dujic. Thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you. God bless all of you, and may Mother Teresa shine her light upon you.
God bless. That was Sister Jean Marie Teresky talking to us about the incredible life of Venerable Mary Teresa Dujic. Pick up the book, The Chronicle. You can go to Amazon.com for that. Or you can pick up my book, They Might Be Saints, where I have a chapter dedicated to her incredible life. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archive, search for Miracle Hunter, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guest today, Ray Grijalba, talking to us about Eucharistic miracles, and Sister Jean Marie Teresky talking to us about that future saint, Venerable Mary Teresa Dujic. And sign up for the newsletter on MiracleHunter.com for more information and miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and more. And now available, as I mentioned, is They Might Be Saints on the Path to Sainthood in America, my brand new book that just came out about 24 Blesseds and Venerables. You can go to EWTN Religious Catalog, which is EWTNRC.com, for more on that. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions, the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.